telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames.
Here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's on vacation this week. I'm happy to be given the reins behind the mic here and delighted as well to be joined again today, as I was one day last week in studio, by Angela Lang. She's the executive director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. How you doing, Angela?
Good. Thanks for having me back. I'm excited.
Oh, it was so much fun last
Yeah.
week. As I told Brian, who's also in the booth there and helping me out today and helping you out today, we should do a permanent show together, but that's up in the air right now. I haven't submitted the proposal.
Already did.
Oh,
well,
Brian.
Then.
I'm up for it.
I am too.
So
there's always just so much to talk about.
There is.
Especially in a year like this. Oh, there's plot twists every corner.
And it just seems like it's been that way since Scott Walker. I mean, we haven't had a minute to rest since 2010 here in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It's just been a crazy time. Late last week when we talked, both you and I still were giddy about Kamala Harris and her chances. Are you giddy still?
You know, I'm excited that our community is so excited. I think we've had some really, really rough times just in the last year or so and more. And so to have our community feel excited for the first time, folks that said, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to vote, are now thinking about coming back. They're excited. And I think for me, in a time of just like extreme darkness and extreme sadness in the world, it does make me happy that there's a little bit of hope and a light at the end of the tunnel, it seems.
Yeah. And you and your team at BLOC go door to door in the community. And I know that must be a little bit easier right now.
I will say our team, they went on doors last week. We had a couple new stations follow because they were incredibly curious of what we were hearing. But our team came back excited. They are having more and more conversations. And I'll tell you, our team, they are not, they're not sensitive per se, right? They definitely want everyone to vote and they get bummed out when they don't have a good conversation. But they keep going, you know, even if they're really tough doors or, you know, it's having a hard time, they keep going no matter what. But the fact that the energy is different in the office, they're excited to continue to talk to folks and to build with folks. But also at the same time, some of the feedback is people are like, well, we're curious what she's going to stand for herself. What is her platform going to look like? And we, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention there were some concerns about her prosecutorial record and the fact that especially folks in our community who have been directly impacted by the criminal justice system recognize that as well. But what's interesting is that folks are very curious of how she is growing on that issue and what she will continue to say around criminal justice. But people are still excited nonetheless, even kind of they're happily, I think, suspicious, I would say.
And I know there's been a ton of people volunteering for the Harris campaign and other allied organizations. Are you getting people asking to volunteer over at BLOC?
Yeah, so we definitely have more folks that want to plug in. We don't have a volunteer program per se, just because we have so many ambassadors and we want to pay people for their labor. But we've definitely had more inquiries, folks reaching out to us, figuring out how they can get involved, if they could get some flyers so they could let folks know in their neighborhood. So there's a little bit of more excitement, and we definitely have gotten more phone calls and emails about trying to figure out ways to plug in. Or last week, I think it was either the same day or the next day, people were already calling us, figuring out how to get Kamala Harris yard signs.
Yeah, I'd like one myself.
Yep.
I'm in a very mixed neighborhood. There are in the town of Dunn, there are several people with Trump signs up and
sure.
a guy next around the corner, literally three houses from mine, who's got four anti-Democratic flags flying, including some weird American flags that they used to call that desecration of the American flag. But they can do it now, I guess. So I want to, last time around, I did pass out Biden yard signs and got several neighbors to put them up. And so we're outnumbered 4-0 right now. So
there you go.
I need myself some yard signs.
I assumed that they would get printed after there's a VP pick and it wouldn't just, you know. But yeah, I think also people are eagerly awaiting and people want to, there's talk about just different ways to show their support. People are digging out old T-shirts from the previous campaign too.
And a friend of mine who I used to know many, many years ago when I was playing soccer and he was helping me get better, he is pushing this Love the Laugh t-shirt
because
that's about all they've got on her right now, which tells you they don't have anything.
I mean, if you have to criticize, that's the thing. Like, we're talking about the president of the United States here. We're talking about folks that can influence world policy, geopolitical matters, can really shape the tone. And the only critique you have is her laughter. You have nothing. It seems that there's other people that have more legitimate critiques that are still on her side, or at least leaning towards her side. But if you have nothing to go on but her laugh or her gender, or to call her a DEI candidate, it goes to show that you've just admitted you have nothing. You are not even playing in a policy conversation. We're playing chess and you're just eating crayons at this point.
And drowning, or swallowing water anyway. I mean, they're floundering and flailing, can't even tread water at this point, even though it shouldn't have been a huge shock that this was a possibility, this was coming down the line.
I mean, I feel if you know, the Trump campaign did its job, they would have, you know, prepared for this scenario. They would have already had, you know, some messaging and framing in case this were the case. You know, maybe that's just something, granted, time is limited and resources are limited on a campaign. But, you know, given the conversations that were happening about a month or so before Biden made his announcement, I would have been preparing on the Trump side of like, okay, we should be ready just in case, because now it looks like you have literally nothing to go on except for just ad hominem attacks, or like, I don't like the way you look. Like, it's stupid. It's not. And it's, I think, quite frankly, insulting to the American public and the American voters, who are going to be looking for discourse, honest discourse about policy. And, you know, there are folks that are wanting real solutions to challenges that they're experiencing. And if you can't even engage in that arena, you've already lost.
And I'm afraid it's just going to get uglier and uglier, too, because that's all they can play right now. And they're not going to win on policy. They're just going to make it ugly. But, you know, that's the Trump playbook. Just get in the gutter and throw everything you can throw.
And it, there, you know, that's, I think right now they're being a little restrained. I'm actually kind of surprised I haven't seen more racist and sexist things. We've seen quite a bit so far, but I'm surprised they didn't just go for it right away. But that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. And I'm very curious to see if they're going to step into that very obvious trap. I think everyone's waiting for the overly, you know, racist Trump ad that's going to be playing 24/7. Everyone's going to be waiting on some of that. Are they going to do it, knowing it's a trap and it might potentially backfire and only rile up her base more and want to come to the defense of a Black woman? Or are they going to, you know, figure out a different way and understand, hey, maybe the old way doesn't work? I don't have hope in that, just given how the Trump's DNC or RNC speech went and his acceptance speech. He had an opportunity to temper feelings and attitudes, and very quickly he went on kind of this tirade of the same Trump that we kind of know and hate. So I'm curious to see how that campaign will navigate it, but I'm sure they'll walk into the obvious traps.
I mean, they can't control him, and he's uncontrollable.
Right.
I mean, he's just all impulse. He's all id. I mean, the guy has got no restraint whatsoever.
Literally can't help himself.
No, he can't. I mean, he's sociopathic that way. I mean, he's a clinical narcissist. All you got to do is look it up. I mean, he's going to be forever in the next volume of mental disorders under clinical narcissists. You're going to see his face. I mean,
category of his own.
Yeah, amazing. Listen, if you're listening to us on the Maggie Dawn Show all over the Civic Media Radio Network, if you're in your office or in your kitchen or parked in your car, you should give us a call at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Happy to take your calls to hear what you have to say about Trump and his floundering, and about how well the campaign is going so far in this first 10 days of the Kamala Harris campaign. I don't know if you watched Jon Stewart last night, did you?
I did. I saw bits and pieces. I love Jon Stewart. I've always loved that man. I had a crush on him when he was younger through The Daily Show. I think that also just mixed my love of politics and comedy together.
I watched him a little bit last night. I thought he was hilarious. We have a few clips of him, I think. Brian's going to share the first one anyway.
In the span of a week, Democrats have gone from the despair of a certain Trump presidency to the joy of a statistical tie. Right now, that feels like victory.
So true, isn't it?
You got to take the wins where you can, especially right now.
Because it was such a low. I mean, we're carrying this burden of knowing in our hearts and even more so in our brains that it was very unlikely that Joe Biden was going to be able to pull us across the finish line. I mean, even before the debate, it was really unlikely. And after the debate, it seemed like next to impossible. And so, yeah, the first feeling I had was exhilaration, was relief when he got out of the race. And then with Kamala Harris taking over, it's been exhilaration ever since, even though, you know, the poll numbers, they have changed a little bit. But yeah, you know, they're still not showing her just dominating. But when we get back from the break, I'm going to share with our audience some poll numbers that are really kind of exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting is that I think folks knew that Joe Biden might be struggling, but we're still trying to rally. There was two camps of folks. People are like, we're just accepting it. And then you have the folks that saw and said, this is an opportunity to try to move him. And then how all of this played out. And I do think that some of it is due to organizing. Yes, there was insiders having conversations, but they were having those conversations because the polling and I think there was some dissatisfaction, especially with some of his policies. So I think all that played a role, too.
Yeah, it wasn't just the so-called elite that pushed
right.
him out.
I mean, there's people power there.
The base wanted him out, too. And as Tammy Baldwin said here in Wisconsin, when she was going around, she heard from people that, look, They don't think Biden can do it. They're concerned about him. They'd rather he pass the baton. And so he passed the baton. And it's been a great thing.
Respect.
Yeah, and it's going to work out. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm not Maggie Dawn. I'm Matt Rothschild substituting for Maggie Dawn. I'm joined again by Angela Lang, Executive Director of Block, and by Brian in the studio. And I hope you'll join us by calling 855-752-4842. We'll be right back.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
Project 2025 is real. They mean it.
He's coming out.
Hey, Matt Rothschild with you on the Maggie Dawn Show all across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined in studio by Angela Lang, Executive Director of Block, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, and the great Brian Kelly in the booth. It's called Fancy Brian. I like to call him the Drew Holiday of civic media. He does everything around here.
Holds it down for us.
I resemble that statement. I'll take it.
he'll do anything to keep the network going, from technical stuff to doing voices. Get him going on Harry Carey. He'll make you laugh every time.
You can wait. Maybe a little later. We'll see.
All right. Warm that up for me. So as I promised, I wanted to tell you about some promising poll numbers that I saw in a Washington Post article this morning called Kamala Harris's Image Bump by the Numbers. I'm not going to read the whole darn thing. I'm just going to read three little paragraphs, what we used to call in the journalism business, the nut paragraphs. An ABC News Ipsos poll on Sunday showed Harris's favorable rating at 43%. That's 8 points higher than her rating last month and 11 points higher than Biden's last month. Then a Wall Street Journal poll on Friday showed 46% of registered voters liked Harris. That's 11 points higher than her showing almost a month ago and 12 points higher than Biden's at the time. Fox News itself did a poll on Friday in four key Midwestern and Rust Belt states, and yes, one of those was Wisconsin, showing Harris's favorable rating averaging 49%, which is 8 points higher than Biden's current number. Angela Lang, why do you think those numbers have bumped up so quickly?
Yeah, I was just taking some notes. I think, you know, one, there's an energy level that, you know, people feel that she's fighting for them in this moment right now. I'm not saying people didn't feel that Biden was fighting for them. I think maybe they just didn't see it. And I think it definitely didn't help given his demeanor. It was hard for him, I think, to portray how much he was maybe fighting behind the scenes or what he claimed to be doing behind the scenes. And to see someone young and energetic, I think people are excited and people feel that there's like that opportunity for a fresh perspective and a young perspective. And I think especially older Black folks and, you know, our grandmas and our aunties, that they see that there's potential for history to have been made as well. I've had so many people reference the Obama 08 election and how they hadn't felt this way since then because it meant so much to them back then. And to see in their lifetime a potential Black woman president, I think is very significant, especially for our older generation.
Yeah, I've been talking with a lot of white women who were big Hillary fans and wanted Hillary to be the first woman president and now feel like they've got a chance to see a woman president before they die. And it's really exciting for people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think more that people get to know her, I think her numbers will continue to go up. And I will say, barring any gaffes, any, you know, particular flubs, obviously she's run for president before, but in a primary, so it's a bit different of a dynamic while currently being vice president as well. She's still got a day job she's got to do. And, you know, does anything that happens in the Biden administration, you know, adversely affect her? Only time will tell. What about any movement and what's happening in Gaza? You know, are encampments going to start back up with students? And, you know, how is all of that going to play out? So I think people will be excited to continue to get to know her. I can imagine just she's going to get that post debate bump if a debate actually happens. I can see that going in her favor. But I think people, when it gets to be crunch time, I think people will start to peel into the layers of things about her stances about Gaza and specifically around crime, given her past.
Yeah. And the situation, Israel and Gaza, is now getting hotter by the minute because there's an attack from Israel on Hezbollah after Hezbollah had attacked Israel. So who knows what's going on there, but it's pretty dicey, and it's been dicey and horrible to watch for a long time. And Netanyahu, the guy should be behind bars. I
mean, should have never spoken.
No.
At the Capitol. Should have never been invited in the first place.
Yeah, that was disgraceful. We've got a couple calls. I want to take Matt from Middleton's on the line. Matt, what's on your mind?
Hey, guys. So it seems to me there are two core groups of MAGA that it'd be helpful if we could speak to or try to sway some of them. And it seems to me it's the Christian evangelicals and the disenfranchised young men who have bought into the machismo, social media influencing of the UFC and the video game culture and Russian bots or whatever is convincing them that women are against them and women's rights have made it so they can't find a date, you know, whatever their problems are. But those are two groups that I'm wondering if you think that any of these vice presidential picks could speak to them, or if that's something we could maybe do through social media in reverse or something. Your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Matt from Middleton, for that question. I just wonder whether these are the right folks to go after. I mean, if self-identified MAGA people, they're not going to change their mind overnight. They're not going to change their mind probably between now and November. But there are a lot of people who voted for Trump last time who are considering voting for Trump or are on the fence. There are a lot of independents. In fact, the ranks of independents have swelled from like 6% to 20% since Kamala Harris got in the race. Those are much much more promising fields to plow, I think. What do you think, Angela?
Yeah, I mean, I think that sums up, I think, a good chunk of the MAGA base. I think if there were to be movement, I would say it would probably be with the Christian evangelicals, but that's mostly trying to tug at their heartstrings from a religious perspective. But I think their views in particular are so far extreme that I don't think that there is an opening. But if there were to be one between the two, that's what it would be. Because, you know, that it's not all, you know, there are some religious folks that are very progressive, right? And is there a commonality between values of religion to bring people in? And I'm speaking completely as an agnostic person, not religious, but wondering, is there like a common value to bring people in? But when you believe that someone's whole existence is a sin, I don't find a lot of common ground there. And then, that second group, we call them incels, or they call themselves incels, involuntarily celibate, which that's their term, not mine. But I think that group is so far gone because they blame women for all of their problems. They for dang sure do not want a country led by a black woman, because that will only somehow exacerbate their the fact that they can't get a date somehow. Somehow it would be Kamala's fault.
Yeah, I think those are, that's a harder group. But there are progressive evangelicals, progressive white evangelicals, progressive black evangelicals. I know Jim Wallace of the Sojourners community in Washington, D.C. has been trying to help lead this fight. We welcome more of your calls at 855-752-4842. That's 855.
You're telling me, guys, angry people and incels? That's the group that they're like, yay, that's us? Okay, just want to clarify.
Hard to bring them around.
But, like, that's, like, the Democratic Party's backbone is black women. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, their backbone is incels.
I also don't think the incels are going to vote at the proportion that black women are going to vote.
Also true.
So we'll be back in a minute. We're going to take more calls. Nancy from Wausau, please hang on. We'll get you right after the break and hope to hear from others out there. 855-752-4842. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. And I'm here with Angela Lang and Fancy Brian.
Explain that, because my voters don't get it.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Maggie's out this week, and I'm happy to be subbing for her today. Actually, I'll be back tomorrow and Thursday, so you'll be sick of me pretty soon. You won't be sick of Angela Lang, though. It's always great to have her right here in the studio with me. Angela Lang is the executive director of Block, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, and I'm also here, of course, with Brian Kelly, Fancy Brian, as he's known around here. And we have a call from Nancy. From Wausau, who is kind enough to hold on. And so we will go straight to you, Nancy.
Hi. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, you're on, Nancy. What's on your mind?
Okay. All right. I really enjoy the show tremendously. And I just wanted to say that there really is life above Highway 29 here. And you guys were talking about the excitement of Kamala running and likening it to Obama in 08. I think what I am seeing up here, the excitement exceeds Obama in 08, believe it or not.
Wow.
And I truly believe that with the leadership under Kamala, we are going to break that glass ceiling this time. I just know it. And I'm just so happy to be a part of it.
Well, from your mouth to God's ear, Nancy, it would be just a tremendous step forward for this country. That's really what this is about. Are we going to take not just a step backward, but just a huge leap backward into some of the ugliest parts of our past? Or are we going to turn the page on all this Trump craziness and move the country forward? I mean, that's the real question. Will Trump have been... it was blowback from Obama, backlash, but not pulling the whole country with him for decades. That's the hope. It was just a momentary thing in time anyway. Or is he going to take us in a very nasty direction, which would be really hard to get out of? I mean, let's remember how delicate democracies are. The country Chile had a democracy for 100 years. They lost it in a day, and it took them 16 years to get back. And Augusto Pinochet, the general who was put in by the CIA and Henry Kissinger down there, murdered tens of thousands and tortured tens of thousands more people. And still in a plebiscite, 16 years later, the guy still got 44% of the vote, which is shocking to me. But that's the fascist base.
Yeah.
That's the fascist mass base that exists in a lot of countries, including ours. I mean, that's, you know, Trump's got 46%. A big chunk of that is super right-wing people.
Yeah. I mean, I think what's interesting is I really do feel like we're in this, like, precipice moment, and there is no middle ground in this moment because things have become so extreme that we are literally either facing a lack of democracy and fascism, and even with Trump's own comments, which we'll get to later, or electing our first Black woman president. Like, there is no middle ground, and that clearly one side is going to prevail, and I just hope that it is a side that leads to us being able to continue to vote every 4 years and 2 years and everything in between. But it's, I keep coming back to the fact that this isn't, you know, the election of, say, like 2012. It's an election now where we're in the shadow of an assassination attempt. We see far right extremists like the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and all of those folks. There's concerns about if we do win, is there going to be another January 6th? This moment could be, I think, or this chapter, hopefully, in history can be written. And the final words are, we have elected our first Black president. And that is the sign that the country starts to balance out and kind of go back to, quote unquote, normal. And I want to be clear, normal doesn't always work for everyone.
And we got a lot of work to do at normal.
Right, right. And I think a lot of folks think that if we just vote for, you know, Kamala Harris, everything is going to be fine. We avoided disaster, but that's not good enough. There's folks that have been radicalized, extreme, that we need to make sure we're organizing around and making sure that they don't commit harm in our communities. There's policy work to be done. And there's a lot of, like, repair. And I think, kind of trauma and healing work that needs to get done as a country. And so I caution folks, I'm glad people are excited, but, like, the real work actually begins after the election to make sure that we keep this. And so I'm not trying to, you know, bring it down, but just have, like, a kind of a grounding and a reality check that there are some folks, even on our election commission, that believe in things like the big lie, and how that those lies perpetuate rhetoric, and people create violent acts because of this rhetoric, because they think Dems are cheating or the liberals are cheating. And what does that lead to in that type of level of political violence? That's not going to go away if we elect Kamala Harris as the first Black president. And we need to caution ourselves that it could actually escalate.
Yeah. I mean, the possibility of electing the first Black woman president is enormous. The difference between the two candidates is enormous.
Yeah.
The difference between the two visions of the parties at this point is enormous. You're absolutely right, Angela Lang. This is not like Clinton versus Dole.
Right.
This is not Bill Clinton versus Bob Dole, who were, you know, big brother, younger brother kind of thing.
Yeah.
Happy candidate, you know, surly but funny candidate. And Bob Dole was a funny guy.
Yeah.
But the difference there in politics on a lot of issues, not all issues, but on a lot of issues, was not nearly as yawning as the difference is, not nearly as dangerous as the difference is right now. So it's nothing really to fool around with. I do want to thank Nancy from Wausau for that excellent call. I want to encourage other callers to join the conversation at 855-752-4842. And I do also want to talk about another issue on Trump, because it gets under my skin as a Jewish American. He's been talking real loose junk about Jews in this country. And Brian's got a couple clips here for us. Go ahead,
Brian. Number one, she doesn't like Israel. Number two, she doesn't like Jewish people. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. And nobody wants to say it.
She doesn't like them. She loves them. That's why she married him.
Yeah, she doesn't like Jewish people. I mean, this is Trump is repeatedly talking about Jews as if they're a singular group.
It's offensive.
Yeah, as if there's no difference in the community, and as if every good Jew in America has to support Netanyahu and all the policies of the far right wing government in Israel. As a Jewish American, I find that extremely offensive.
Yeah,
it's simply not true that that Jewish Americans view the Netanyahu government in one way. There are a lot of Jews in this country, including me, who believe Netanyahu is a war criminal and deserves to be brought to the International Criminal Court. There are a lot of Jews who believe in the state of Israel, but not the settlement policy that's been the policy of the governments of Israel for a long time. There are a lot of Jewish Americans like me who believe in the two-state solution. There are a lot of Jewish Americans for whom Israel isn't the most important issue of all. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's a tautology between Jews and supporting the state of Israel. Justice, justice, justice shall ye pursue is a very important commandment for Jewish people. Just as, Angela, you were talking about repairing and healing. Mm-hmm. I mean, tikkun olam is the expression that we have in Hebrew for healing the world. And those are really important issues for many, many Jewish Americans. That's why you have 70% of the Jewish population in the United States historically voting on the Democratic side. It's not as high as 93%, which is, I think, black women in this country voting for Democrats over time. But it's the second biggest group that supports Democrats. And Jews that I know support Democrats because it's a value system that more coincides with our value system and the Democratic Party's value system than the value system of the Republicans. And certainly right now, the value system of Donald Trump, which is cruelty and sadism and autocracy and authoritarianism and fascism, is nowhere near the value system that most Jews I know and most Jews I've grown up with. And I grew up in Highland Park, Illinois, which was majority Jews. That's not the view that flies among the people I know.
Well, I'm glad you took a pause and we came back to this, because I think also this is how like dog whistles work, right? And one, if this was, I don't know, this sounded like some random podcast. Apparently they give anyone with a mic, anyone a microphone these days, including myself.
I'm demonstrating that fact.
They give us anybody a mic. But if this would have been like a real journalist, like somebody should have pushed back and said, hey, well, how do you square away the fact that her husband is Jewish? Like, make him answer. Did he just, like, not have his facts right? Did he not know Doug was Jewish? Maybe he just didn't know. I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if the man just, like, was incompetent.
I have what the actual, the host said. This is later on in the podcast. Oh, but goodness. Trump just said, yes, yes, you can barely hear it. But this podcaster, he does have a, hey, how you doing?
Kind of a thing. Very so Sopranos.
It's Sid. His name is Sid, and he has friends, and it's a podcast. So this is what he said towards the end of the interview. We have some more clips in between, but this is towards the end, just referring to exactly what Angela was saying.
He is, and they tell me that this Harris's husband, Doug Emhoff, Mr. President, is Jewish. He's Jewish like Bernie Sanders is Jewish. Are you kidding me? He's a crappy Jew. Yeah. He's a horrible Jew. So on the way out, we covered a lot here.
I mean, who is this guy? You know, the first rabbi of Jerusalem who ever decides who's a good Jew and who's a bad Jew?
His name is Sid. His name is Sid, and he says stuff like this.
He sounds upset that he got rejected on The Sopranos. Also, I just watched The Sopranos for like the first time like a year ago, and it was amazing. Love it. It's interesting. But yes, it's also interesting because it proves the point that I was actually going to make before you played the clip, is this idea of what a good Jew and a bad Jew is, and how dangerous that is, especially when we see the rise in anti-Semitism and violence. And, you know, it sounds like, you know, Trump is on FaceTime talking to a friend, just talking off the cuff. But I think, you know, what people hear is the reinforced stereotypes of Jewish folks, the anti-Semitic tropes that I think people grew up with.
Curses.
And it reinforces that. And what does that do? Again, this comment, you know, he was saying, you know, kind of off the cuff or whatever, but could lead to real violence and real consequences because it reinforces a narrative that further radicalizes people and then hurts the Jewish community.
I mean, we're seeing synagogues defaced. We're seeing violence at synagogues. We're seeing cemeteries in a place like Cincinnati. I have a friend who's got relatives in that cemetery, and the graves were desecrated. I mean, there's a lot of ugliness out there. There's a lot of hatred and bigotry, and hatred against Jews is one of the oldest bigotries there is out there. And this kind of loose talk from Trump and whoever this idiot podcaster was does not make life safer for any Jews in the United States. It doesn't lift the dialogue. I mean, Trump was supposed to have a Road to Damascus transformation.
Don't worry. He does.
The assassination.
Trump does, you said that 70% of Jewish people do vote Democrat. Don't worry. He reached out to them and said, and such bringing together terms. Well, here, just listen to what he has to say. It's amazing.
But frankly, any Jewish person that voted for her or him or whoever it's going to be, I assume it's going to be her, anybody that did that should have their head examined. If you love Israel, or if you're Jewish, because a lot of Jewish people do not like Israel, and they happen to be in New York. You know that.
Yes.
But if you are Jewish, regardless of Israel, if you're Jewish, if you vote for a Democrat, you're a fool, an absolute fool. They have let Jewish people down since Obama at levels that nobody could believe possible.
I mean, what is that guy talking about? That, you know, I just scratch my head sometimes if I don't turn him off completely, because I'm getting a bad, almost fatal allergy.
How do you measure that voice? Like, how do you measure that?
So, like, the way he's talking about, like, Jewish people is, like, very similar to how he talks about the blacks, right? Which is very offensive. And it's like, can you talk about or say anything in reference to a whole group of people that doesn't sound blatantly offensive? Every time he talks about a whole group, it just makes my skin crawl because it's very racist.
His level of generalization is just off the charts. It's just unbelievable. Jack from Merrimack, I see you, but we got to take a break here in a second. So if you can just hang on for a minute. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm speaking with Angela Lang and with Brian Kelly in the booth. Please join our conversation, 855-752-4842, and we'll be right back.
Schumer has become a Palestinian. Chuck Schumer is officially now a Palestinian.
It's funny, but it's true. It's sad. He is.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here. I'm subbing in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's on vacation this week. I'll be with you tomorrow and Thursday as well. I'm delighted to have in the studio with me today Angela Lang, Executive Director at Block, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. And it's always fun chatting with Brian Kelly, the man in the booth who does it all here at Civic Media. And we've got a couple callers, Brian, so we might as well just go straight to Jack, who's been on hold the longest. Jack, you're on the air. What you got for us?
Thanks for taking my call. Well, this is the approach of the MAGA party. It's not the Republican Party anymore. It's the MAGA party, let's face it. And this is the approach of that party. And it was epitomized by Walker, who was caught in Wisconsin saying this, divide and conquer. You make it about tribalism. Don't make it about policy. Don't make it about what can we do for America. Make it about tribalism and use fear and anger and hatred to divide as much as you possibly can. And it's been successful. Anybody that's watched what's been happening in the Middle East knows that the Biden administration has been doing their best to negotiate at a minimum a ceasefire. In the appropriations bill for military, they put in $9 billion for humanitarian aid for Gaza. I mean, and yet we've got people that are in the streets shouting genocide Joe. Excuse me, that would be Bibi Netanyahu who is committing genocide over there, if anybody is. And he has told the our president, he's basically said, I don't care what you do. I'm going to prosecute this war the way I decide, and nobody is going to change that.
Jack from Merrimack, really appreciate the call. I agree with you on part, and I disagree on you in part. I disagree with you in that, you know, this genocide has been carried out with U.S. weapons. Yep. Let's just not blink at that. Let's not just whisk that under the rug. And while Biden's rhetoric at times has been good, and Kamala Harris has been a little better on the rhetorical side, the actual fact of the matter that billions of dollars of U.S. military equipment has gone to the state of Israel to wage this collective punishment, which is against international law, is a disgrace.
People want a ceasefire, but they also want an immediate end to arming supplies, right? Like, if people, like, people can ask for a ceasefire, understanding that it's there's going to be negotiations and diplomats and all sorts of people involved. One thing that I think people, myself included, and folks that have supported the encampments and the students and everybody that has been outspoken, is that one thing that Biden can do right now is cut off aid to Israel, point blank, period. And there's reasons why that won't happen. But I think that that doesn't mean that that voting, like, that group is a voting bloc. We can't forget that there was more than double the amount that Biden won by that voted uninstructed in April. And that is a huge signal that
a lot
that
of folks here in Wisconsin.
Exactly. It was like 44,000 people in Wisconsin, and the goal was about 20,000. Right. And so that is a group of people that deserve to have, you know, those issues amplified and continue to talk about, especially when there's this fresh start, when people are wondering where is the vice president going to fall on this. She has an opportunity to meet those voters, to listen, to talk to them, to actually, you know, if there are protesters outside of wherever she's going, engage with them. This is a moment for her where she can do something different.
Yeah, and I hope she will. So, Jack from Merrimack, I appreciate the call. The part I agree with you, of course, is on Scott Walker.
Oh, yeah.
Divide and conquer.
We don't like him.
And that's exactly what Trump has been doing. Pushing.
We're going to deal with collective bargaining for all public employee unions.
Right.
Because you divide and conquer.
And that was with Diane Hendricks, the richest woman in Wisconsin, who whispered in his ear, when are you going to make Wisconsin a right-to-work state? When are you going to make Wisconsin a red state? And he said, first, we're going to divide and conquer. And he pitted public sector workers against public sector workers. He then pitted public sector workers against private sector workers. He demonized teachers of all things and got away with it.
I'm having flashbacks. I'm having flashbacks of the protests.
Yeah. dare I say yada, 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 then 4, 5, 8 people end up dead in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just not a happy time here.
Remember when he ran for president, though?
Oh,
I think Kim Kardashian's marriage lasted longer than his presidency.
Very possibly. We've got a call from Dave in Madison. Dave, you're on the line. Talk to us.
Well, the reason that I called was to discuss the support of Democrats for Kamala Harris, which is very, very strong. No one accused me of not being pro-Israel. I've argued with you, Matt, a lot. And but, you know, just look, 34 of the 36 representatives in Congress are Jewish. Only two of them aren't. They all believe in a two-state solution like you and me, Matt. And I'm glad that you do believe in a two-state solution. But, you know, and I have a lot of other things to say. I don't like Netanyahu either, and neither does the establishment Jewish community, by the way. As far as genocide in Gaza, I think it's ridiculous to say there's a genocide. Number one, I mean, you have to kill in whole or in part with intent, either part or all of a population because of who they are.
Is that not happening?
No, if Israel wanted to do that, they could do that in Gaza in a couple of days. They wouldn't have very specific targeting profiles with lawyers right next to them whenever they do a targeting decision. And they dropped leaflets.
So can you explain why there's a warrant out for Netanyahu's arrest for war crimes?
Yeah, I can easily explain it. The International Criminal Court is totally political.
No, not mansplain it. I meant, like, explain it of, like, why that is not, like, being considered a genocide when he literally has a warrant for war crimes.
Yeah, he has a warrant because the International Criminal Court is completely politicized.
All right, Dave, we're gonna cut it there. Appreciate the call, but I think if...
Agree to disagree.
I think if you, and if you're listening, if you're one of our listeners, if you want to look up the definition of genocide, you will see that what the government of the Netanyahu government in Israel is doing in Gaza actually falls within that definition. And that's why the International Criminal Court has cited him for it. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in for Maggie here. I'm joined by Angela Lang of Block. And please join our conversation at 855-752-4842. I've got a suggestion for Biden when we come back about who to give the Presidential Medal of Freedom to.
I believe that I'm being called to lead by helping to clear the field in this race so that a positive conservative message can rise to the top of the field.
Nobody likes me.